Those who follow the criminal justice system in South Africa were taken aback, I suppose, to a degree about the news that the Director of Public Prosecutions, in other words, the Chief Prosecutor for South Gauteng, Advocate Andrew Chauke, was suspended on Monday by President Cyril Ramaphosa. It is a very big deal indeed, as we'll find out in a moment from General Johan Booysen. Johan, thanks for joining us. It's been quite the month for police and ex-policemen, and indeed you have been someone who's been in the public eye for well over a decade now. But before we go into the details of this case, how important is the position that Chauke, I suppose, currently occupies? Because he has been suspended, but he hasn't been fired.
Alec, let me ask you this way. When I concluded my evidence at the Zondo Commission of Inquiry into State Capture, I told the judge, the chairperson, that unless the remnants of the Juba faction at the time are removed from the NPA, they will remain captured and they will proceed and continue to undermine the newly appointed NDPP. And I think those were prophetic words, and it turned out that they indeed did undermine her. And I think the suspension of Edgar Chauke is long overdue.
How did you then personally feel when you heard the news? Did you celebrate?
I won't use the word celebrate. I don't pick up at other people's ills. But equally, I did not shed a tear when I heard it. He's been responsible for a lot of people having difficult times. And yes, I think it's time for him to face the music.
It's an interesting point that you make there about Advocate Shamila Bahoy. She has been widely criticized for not acting at all. But if I read you correctly, from what you told the Zondo Commission, she really had her hands tied behind her back.
I think with regards to Chauke, she indicated to the president about 2 years ago that she should be suspended. So I'm surprised that it's taken so long for him to be suspended. The criticism that she had to endure over the last couple of years, I think, is partly due to those remnants of the Juba faction that had remained in the NPA, and there are still a few of them left. Juba herself had been fired, consequent to my testimony at the Mokgoro Commission of Inquiry into her fitness. Advocate Norco had resigned when she was served the papers for her disciplinary hearing. A few others had gone on pension, and there are a few remaining in the NPA that I think that I mentioned and testified about, and not only myself, people like McBride and a few others also testified regarding the actions of those prosecutors, the hand they had in facilitating state capture.
So without getting into more of the details, because you have listed some of the names, what exactly is this faction and how did they get such a very strong position in the National Prosecuting Authority? And I suppose following on from there, what was their job? Who put them there and what did they want them to do?
Well, you would recall that prior to the appointment of Advocate Nonkobo Jiba, she was appointed as the acting head of the NDPP. Prior to her appointment, there had been a few appointments, some that had been reversed by the Constitutional Court at the time. And subsequent to her appointment, and I say it with circumspection, she was appointed by the then President Zuma. And I say it with circumspection. I think she was placed there to play a specific role. If one looks at some of the outcomes of the cases that they had to consider during her tenure.
And Chauke presumably was very close to her.
Well, I would say he was very close to her. If you look at the cases that he involved himself with, one particular case, the Richard Ndluli case, the case with Gunnis Breitenbach, it was it was abundantly clear that they were very close.
Well, we do have a statement from the Democratic Alliance saying that Chauke, it's a good riddance to bad rubbish kind of thing if you want to read between the lines. But Johan, from your perspective, you had a personal or your career was personally impacted by Chauke. Just to take us through what happened there.
So what happened is, and I think it was around about 2010, a newspaper article appeared in the major Sunday newspaper accusing myself of effectively running a death squad, which happened to be the Cato Manor Serious of Violent Crime Unit. And the investigation was launched, and soon after that, a number of the detectives from Cato Manor were arrested. I was also arrested a few months later. The person who authorized my prosecution at the time was Jiba. Once they discovered the evidence to us, I realized that there was absolutely no evidence linking me to the commission of any offense. I took the matter on review in the Durban High Court, where the judge, Judge Corwin, ruled that there was no evidence linking me to any of the crimes that I'd been prosecuted for, and the charges against me were withdrawn. A while later, after Advocate Nkasana was appointed to take over from Chiba, she was prosecuted for lying under oath in the court application that I filed to have the decision to prosecute me reviewed. But no sooner had she been prosecuted, the then President Zuma got rid of Nkasana and replaced him with Sean Abrams, who then withdrew charges against Jiba and re-prosecuted myself. And I was in the process of taking that matter on review as well at the time. But then in the interim, Advocate Batwe was appointed, and she had the matter investigated by four senior advocates within the MPA. One of the persons was Advocate Rodney de Kock, who then became the deputy. And they brought out a damning report against all these prosecutors that were involved in our persecution.
So it's pretty clear you were doing your job, you were ruffling the wrong feathers, they wanted you out of the way. Amongst those that you were targeting or were investigating was Jacob Zuma's son, Edward, who is a strange character to say the least. What was it that you were concerned about with Edward Zuma, given that he seems to be now coming back into prominence in the political scene?
The investigation related to the 2010 Soccer World Cup, the deployment of policemen and accommodation that was paid for them, and various other procurement issues. And most of the business went through the books of one particular businessman in Durban. And that raised suspicions with our financial head at the time. We brought that to my attention, and we launched an investigation. And then it emerged through that investigation that there were links between the then provincial commissioner and this businessman, and I was basically told to stop the investigation, and I did not. We proceeded with the investigation. In that period, I noticed that 45 million rand had already been paid out to this businessman, and 15 million was about to be paid out, and I stopped the payment of that. And that's when Edward Zuma visited me at my office and asked me to release the 15 million rand, and wanted to know from him on what basis. And he said, well, he said to me he was a silent partner of this businessman and that he invested in the business. And I frankly told him that I cannot release it because if I would do that, I'll be making myself guilty of corruption as well. What's interesting, Alec, is and I can say that now because it had come out in the media via the businessman after he was prosecuted. Crime intelligence were intercepting the communications at the time. And it was legally done. And that evidence will be presented in the trial of the businessman when it eventually starts. One of the conversations was where the businessman had phoned Debo Mzobe, who's a relative of Jacob Zuma, the previous president, and told him about what I had done. And Mzobe told him in uncertain terms, Boyson's wings will be clipped.
For people outside of the inner circle or the the detailed stuff that's going on there, they'd be shaking their heads and asking, but hang on, here's a police general. Sure, you got a good job now and good for Fidelity that for appointing you head of their investigations there. But haven't you got a case against the state, given that these were people who were lying and through their lying got you arrested, got you fired from, and clearly had an impact on your career?
Well, you're looking at criminal and civil. Criminally, I've laid charges against some of the prosecutors. Sean Abrams and Marshall Mohatle, for instance, when there was an application by Freedom Under the Law, misled the court. When the charges against Juba was withdrawn by Sean Abrams, it was taken on review. I think it was Freedom Under the Law and the Helen Suzman Foundation. There were three judges presiding, and all three found that Marshall Mohatle and Sean Abrams had in affidavits claimed that it was Mohatle who withdrew the charges, but they had found that it was indeed Sean Abrams who had withdrew the charges, which I would argue makes him guilty of perjury. I then opened a docket against those two for perjury. I picked up Selim Wahema was the lead prosecutor in my matter. He lied in a prosecution memorandum. He fabricated evidence in the prosecution memorandum, which he submitted to Sean Abrams to reauthorize my prosecution. And I laid charges against Selim Wahema in 2016, charges of fraud and defeating the ends of justice. That matter has been lying with the investigative directorate for over 2 years. I had written letters ad infinitum, ad nauseum to the head of the ID advocate, Andrea Johnson. Some of them she responded to, and of late she had not been responding to my letters. She invited me to a meeting to her office, which I did, and I told her in uncertain terms, I will not leave this matter. Unfortunately, nothing has happened to Mahema as we speak. So I placed on notice about 2 months ago through my attorneys that unless she makes a prosecutorial decision to either prosecute or not prosecute, so that I can consider my options either way, that I will be taking the matter to court.
You'll be taking the matter to court, what, as a private prosecution?
Well, obviously, if they prosecute him, then that settles the matter. If they do not prosecute him, then I will apply for a nolle prosequi certificate, and then I will institute a private prosecution. But the thing is, she's not taking a decision, and it's a straightforward. It's not a complicated matter. Any criminal law student 101 will tell you it's a simple matter of fraud.
This brings us to the timing of Chauke's suspension, and as you mentioned earlier, Shamila Batoy tried to get this done 2 years ago. Why now, especially given what you've just said about Ms. Johnson not taking a decision? Our president is famous for not taking decisions and for sitting on things. Where do you think the spur came to have the suspension happen right now at this point?
Alec, I'm going to speculate, and I might be right and I might be wrong. Of recent times, Advocate Shamila Batoy has made certain allegations with regards to the NPA being infiltrated. I would agree with her, but I would argue that they were already infiltrated at the time when I testified at the Zondo Commission of Inquiry. And then of late, we've also had the statements by the Provincial Commission of KwaZulu-Natal, General Mkhwanazi, making allegations of basically the whole judiciary that's been compromised. I think that, in a way, and the fact that Advocate Batoy had requested the president 2 years ago to suspend Chauke, I think could have perhaps had a role to play, because the way I understand from the media, she was called in to explain herself, and I would venture a guess that she, in all probability, tell the person, look, I've recommended 2 years ago for this man to be suspended, and it's now 2 years down the line, and I think perhaps that prompted him to take this action now.
There's some parallels between your, in fact, a number of parallels between your story and that of General Mkhwanazi from what we know. You're both from KwaZulu-Natal. You were running the Hawks in KwaZulu-Natal. He was running all of the police force. You're both generals. You both have good reputations. In a conversation that I had with the head of business in KZN, she said, Melanie Vaness, that business is 100% behind Mkhwanazi. Also, he is being accused in a whispering campaign of running death squads in the same way as you were accused, not in a whispering campaign, but more publicly of death squads. It seems like history might be repeating itself here. Might he have more success or chances of success than you had?
Well, I'm glad to see businesses at least supporting him officially and openly. During my trials and tribulations, I was led to defend for myself. I became a leper. I was ostracized and basically chucked aside. Alec, for me to comment on what's currently playing out in KwaZulu-Natal might be, I feel, a bit inappropriate, and I think imprudent for me to make statements on those issues now. But what I am prepared to say is that besides the National Prosecuting Authority, one looks at the police, and I include the DPCI, the Hawks. I think they've all reached a critical mass point now, where unless these issues are now contained and addressed properly, that one could have, as in a critical mass event, a nuclear explosion that might spiral out of control.
Sure, that's quite hectic. What do you mean by that?
Alec, we've reached a point now where, I mean, if we look at the allegations by General Mkhwanazi, making serious allegations against basically the entire justice system, cabinet ministers are implicated. Now, whether those allegations are right or wrong, I do not know. But what I can state, having been dealing with the police for the last 8 years from the other side, as there's been a rapid deterioration of the ability of the police to address crime. And we find the same thing in the courts. I had a meeting with my investigators this morning. There's one particular court in the Gauteng area, Palm Reach, where we're continuously having problems of prosecutors withdrawing cases, throwing out cases, and it becomes evident, and normally the same prosecutor over and over again. And it's clear and evident to us that there must be collusion between defense lawyers and the prosecutors. Now, I'm busy taking that up with the prosecuting authority. Now, if your police services, and I'm talking about the police as a whole, I mean, if you look at the detective service, there are a couple of thousand detectives short nationally. There's just no ways that they can cope with the volumes of work that they presently have. Add to that the general lawlessness that's prevailing in the country, with courts not functioning properly. I feel that unless something drastically is done, and there must be a political will to see this through. Kicking the can down the road by appointing commissions of inquiry, I don't think it's going to suffice. During the commission of inquiry, this is on the commission of inquiry, as evidence emerged during testimony of various witnesses, I think, and I'm not pointing fingers, but I think at that juncture, action should have been taken, and they should not have waited for the commission to finalize its work. So hopefully, and what I'm trying to say here is, as evidence emerges from this present commission of inquiry that the president has announced, that action will be swiftly taken, and that we're not going to wait for another year or two for the thing to lapse, and then for the next commission of inquiry to establish why this commission of inquiry didn't work.
You know, it sounds a lot like when I speak to economists and they explain what should happen, and unfortunately it never does happen. Are you saying that this should happen, or do you have any confidence that it will happen? In other words, as the evidence comes through, that we will see action, which does seem to be something sorely lacking in this republic of little consequence. We can't say no consequence anymore, because at least we're getting some wins, but it does seem to take an age.
I don't think your listeners will blame me for being skeptical, and I'll tell you why. I testified at various commissions of inquiry, the Alexander Commission of Inquiry into Tax Violence. I testified at the Malloy Commission of Inquiry into political violence in KwaZulu-Natal. I testified at the Zondo Commission of Inquiry into state capture. And very little emanated from my evidence and of other witnesses. Weren't it for the assistance of people like Robert McBride, who happened to be the head of IPED at the time, we eventually managed to have a handful of people prosecuted. But then again, if one look at the prosecutors against whom evidence was laid at the Zondo Commission. I mean, for me to be writing letters, like I said, at ad infinitum ad nauseam, for them just to make a move on these prosecutors, I mean, I remain skeptical. I stand to be corrected, and I hope this time I'm going that I am wrong.
General, there's a point that I'd like to get your comment on, and the timing. It gets back to the timing of all of this. We've had General Mkhwanazi making his bombshell statements. We also have some very serious pressure coming from the United States about what's happening in South Africa. And then on top of that, you have the Democratic Alliance saying it's not going to vote for the budgets unless there is action taken on corruption. It's almost as though with this ANC government, you need pressure to be sustained over a period of time for any damn thing to happen. Now, you have said you're skeptical, but this is the way that a rational mind would interpret what we're seeing at the moment. In other words, if you want to continue to see progress, don't take your foot off the gas.
Indeed, Alex. And that's why it's important that institutions like Freedom Under the Law, the Helen Suzman Foundation, and various other role players keep their foot on the pedal. Unfortunately, what seems to have happened in the past is the moment the attention is refocused on a different subject, and the present matter seems to peter out to an extent where no one pays any attention to it. I hear what you say with regards to the predicament the country finds itself in with the international community. I had a discussion with Rob Hershoff about a month or so ago, and he agrees. Unless we change this thing around now, it might just be too late.
Well, that pressure from offshore is about to intensify a number of notches. Representative Johnny Johnson's bill, which is really, really hectic. It's going to be bringing sanctions against individual members of the South African government as a starting point. That has now got through the committee stage. So it's no longer just a bill. Johnson tweeted last night that it's now going to the next level. It's unlikely to be passed before they go on recess in the US because it's their summertime. But it is very, very much now in the next phase, and perhaps we'll see action on that front too. And I guess all of these things, for someone like you who's gone through a period, as you say, where you were stoksilalien, a very little support. In a way, I suppose, personally, you must feel that it was worth hanging in there. It was worth persevering because the truth does eventually come out.
Yes, Alec, at the time, I didn't think of it that way. It was a matter of doing my job. It became progressively more difficult to do it. And ultimately, I found myself in that predicament where I had no choice. It's not as if I wanted to be a hero, and I had no choice but to basically fight for survival for myself and my family. fortunately, things turned out well for me, and ultimately the truth came out and the truth prevailed.
Nothing more powerful than the truth, General Johan Booysen, a crime-fighting activist today and head of investigations at the Fidelity Group. I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.